Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And I'm going to ask Phil, our producer, to get our next guest on the line, but right now he has a question up on the screen, and Lisa had called in and asked what I know about Meridia, a weight loss drug, and I'll have to tell you, I don't know the first thing about it, and I'm sorry we don't have Dr. Tracy on the line still. We really would have to look at the brochure and see if it's a serotonin inhibitor or a serotonin enhancer drug. And if it is, I think you have to be very, very careful with that drug or any other serotonin-enhancing drugs, because they can, of course, have really dramatic and deleterious effects on literally every aspect of our function, on our mind, on our heart, on our various organs. So these are not drugs that should be taken without consideration. In fact, the people who developed the serotonin inhibitors, I had come forward and said, you know, the idea that these drugs act simply upon the brain is just foolishness. These organs impact upon every organ in the body, and the effect on many of the organs is equally destructive to the effect on the brain. Well, right now we have with us Jeff Nyquist, and Jeff has been a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. He works with Chris Ruddy. He writes articles for WorldNet Daily. He's an investigative reporter, and I got something from him just the other day, talking about the Chinese communist takeover of our Panama Canal, its implications as far as our lives are concerned, the fact that the Chinese communists are smuggling drugs into Mexico and then they're coming into the United States and on and on. And, of course, the implications of Y2K, what this is going to mean, the fact that many of the countries such as Russia are simply going to implode with the advent of Y2K. So, Jeff, it's good to have you with us. Did you get through that class you were taking or monitoring?
Yeah, it was Professor Stephen Jenkins at HSU is teaching a course on the Apocalypse 2000.
And is he for or against it?
He's a Buddhist.
I see.
But he has a Christian background. He grew up and I guess he has some strong feelings. There's something to the prophecies. Something's going to happen, which I was surprised from a university professor.
Well, of course, if he's a Buddhist, he certainly has access to the New Age material that's being put out. And if you read and study what the New Agers tell you, they tell us that there are going to be dramatic changes with the coming of the new millennium. Now, much of what I try to put out, I put out based upon my research of what the other side says. And the other side says, and these are the people who many times are pulling the strings behind the scenes, they say that Y2K is going to transform society. Are they right? Well, I fear that in many respects they may be. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah.
I was very interested in some of the remarks you made, though, about what's going to happen to the Russian oil industry with Y2K, what's going to happen to China, what's going to happen to countries throughout the world. And as you pointed out, America probably will be in better shape than almost any other nation in the world. Why don't you pick up on that thought and develop it?
Yeah, the United States has the largest number of programmers and is closest to the technology. A lot of this technology spread to the rest of the world through us, and a lot of countries, including Japan, has stolen things from us. So, you see, it's like cheating in school. And all of a sudden, the real test comes, and the fact that you've cheated doesn't help you. The fact that so many of these countries have all those sucker Americans, and they steal our two-digit chip, and then they're stuck. And in many areas, is whatever the problem is here, my understanding is that it's worse in other countries. Because, after all, America commands the money. It commands the people. They can fix these problems. And these other countries like Japan and Russia are behind, or they're not even trying at all to fix the problem. And what's really severe is the Russian oil industry. What's a severe problem? Because, as we all know, modern economies, industrial economy like Russia's, is very heavily oil dependent, diesel fuel, gasoline, oil. And if anything should happen, if that should be compromised, then you have a dislocation of tremendous proportions And we know that natural gas is going to be even more affected than oil refineries. And I have connections in the oil industry, and they're telling me that the Russian oil refineries and gas pipelines are they're going to be a disaster. And you know, it's, if this happens in Russia, here they've had an 11% expansion of their industrial production in the last year, and that's going to be completely undone overnight in a matter of days.
And of course, they do not have the capacity, they don't have the technology, they don't have the programmers. There's no way that they can address the problem. You know, we know that AT&T has put out something like $500 million to correct their problems. These three or four major banks have spent something like $3 billion to correct their problems, so that they have been able to throw money at it and really get their programs up to date. But a lot of the smaller companies in America, and certainly most of the rest of the world, is just totally incapable of doing that. Now, one of the big questions we all have is, what about the thermonuclear weapons? What about the missiles? What about our missiles, our warheads? What about Russia's missiles and warheads? What about China's missiles and warheads? Certainly, the Chinese, all of their technology they've stolen from us, and most of the Russian technology has been stolen from us. And if they have the weapons, are they going to work after the 1st of January? Or will they have the philosophy, well, if you don't use them, you're going to lose them?
Nobody knows. Somebody somewhere probably does know, but it's not clear in the open press that what is going to happen with weapon systems. Obviously, a military system that is more computerized like ours has greater vulnerabilities, but the kind of weapons that are being used today, submarines, missiles, so forth, a lot of those require chips in them, and although nobody knows exactly how they will be affected or how they will be differently affected in Russia and China, we know there will be effects. I once had a discussion on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange with an investor, and I said, how would a nuclear exchange affect the stock market? And, he said, well, very negatively. And I said, well, is it because, doomsday is negative thinking is bad for the stock market? He said, no, it's the unpredictability. it's that if we could all predict doomsday, we'd all get out of the market in time and there wouldn't be a problem.
Well, of course.
And it's really funny because the same thing applies to the military sphere. Generals and military officers all the way down to platoon commanders want to be able to know what they're working with, whether the weapons they're working with will work. And all of military planning is based on prediction. You know, is this predictable? Do we know what we're doing? Nobody is going to originate a battle plan who doesn't know what's going to happen. It's too dangerous. And so there's one great relief, is that if Y2K, if the Russians have the same problem we do or worse, and it's possible. I mean, who knows? Maybe this whole thing, Y2K, is a giant sabotage operation on us. That it's been done by the Eastern Bloc, by Russian or Chinese agents, and that they don't have the problem in their military systems. Although it's odd, we know they have it in their, for example, the Russian oil industry. But if they have the problem as bad as we do or worse, which is the greater probability, then a military operations after the 1st of January assume an unpredictable value that scares generals away from doing anything. However, that very fact that a country like Russia could be disarmed spontaneously by this Y2K bug on January 1st could push them to use these weapons before that date. It's a possibility. You know, I don't make a hard and fast prediction, but it's something to look at. It's something to think about.
Well, now, what about China? What about their military capacity? What about their industrial capacity with Y2K? Certainly, they've been moving very rapidly to industrialize. Mm-hmm. Is their industry computer-dependent, what about their military? Is it computer-dependent?
Well, again, those critical systems that militaries use early warning systems, radars, defense computers, some missile launching systems, certainly ships, the computers that are used on ships. I mean, in order to shoot down a modern aircraft, you need tracking, you need the surface-to-air missiles. You know, a cruise missile has chips in it. Now, ballistic missiles work differently. They work on different principles. But so many of the weapon systems are potentially affected that it is a very serious possibility for certain weapons being useless or being temporarily out of action at a very critical moment. Here we have China threatening war in the Western Pacific. We have North Korea saying that a thermonuclear world war is imminent. That's what the North Korean official line is right now.
And, of course, I think really that's a rather frightening thing. But is that all bluster? Is that an effort to get the Americans to come in and just give them more money? They're saying, well, you know, if you give us more money, we won't try our three-stage rocket that might hit your shores. So, you know, if you just give us more money, and we gave them money, you know, when they were threatening, when they were supposedly developing a thermonuclear warhead or an atomic warhead, and you know, and then they went ahead and did it anyway, and they want more money, and now it's, well, war is imminent, give us more money. Is this all bluster? Is this blackmail? Or do you think that this is foreshadows some very serious and perhaps terrifying events, of which will dwarf what's happened in Turkey recently?
Yeah, I think that there's an element of, there's always been an element of blackmail and nuclear blackmail, especially in Russia and these other countries, saying, you know, we need food, we need foreign aid, we need technology infusions. And then they make promises not to build nuclear weapons or to abide by treaties.
And then, they don't do it.
Yeah, they break the treaty, they take the cash. I mean, we even have found out that the Bank of New York, it is believed, has laundered $200 million in addition to Russian mafia money that was IMF money originally given to Russia, as if they sent a kickback back here to the U.S. for the thanks for the $20 billion, here's your kickback money. It's very odd, the financial transactions. I mean, for example, to give you an idea of how crazy it is financially related to these nuclear war preparations. A year ago, as you know, the Russian economy went through a financial cave-in. The banks in Russia, which are mostly shut down, blew up. They simply went belly up. And it was a tremendous crisis, and people were making very dire predictions about Russia. But you know what? It's odd. Russian industrial production, they've had one of the largest industrial expansions in recent years in the 12 months since that happened. 11% increase in Russian industrial production. Something strange is happening. There was an economist recently commenting on this, who was from one of the research think tanks on the East Coast, saying, you know, there can't be an industrial expansion when the banks are caved in. How has this been done? What's going on?
How has it been done?
Yeah, I think it's like the famine that didn't happen. Last fall, the Russians had reported that they were experiencing the worst famine that they had had in 40 years.
And we had to have more food from America, right?
Right, and in fact, the United States and Western Europe shipped them something like $1 to $2 billion worth of grain and other foodstuffs. And it turned out, when all was said and done, that the 5 million metric ton shortfall of food production in Russia turned out to be a 2 million metric ton surplus. So they actually produced a surplus. There was no famine in Russia. And the two or so billion dollars, I think the total was like 2 point something billion, of food sent by the West and other sources just simply got stocked away in their strategic stockpile.
And the strategic stockpile is the Russians' preparation for war.
Yes, their military, their for nuclear war.
And of course,
food. Yeah.
I think it's so vitally important that our listeners understand that the Russians really believe nuclear war is not only fightable, but it's winnable.
Yes.
Americans say, "Oh no, it's too horrible to contemplate," and so we're not going to have a defense. We're going to leave our cities open for destruction. And of course, I look at things from a biblical point of view, and if you read the latter part of the book of Revelations, you'll suddenly find that the whore of Babylon, which some people believe is America, is simply destroyed overnight by fire. And could this be what we're talking about? Could we talk about the nuclear destruction of America? Is this what is prophesied in the book of Revelation by a nation that really has become totally corrupt and decadent? Well, these are interesting things to contemplate from a geopolitical point of view and then from a biblical point of view. Our telephone number here, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call, I'd like to have your input, why don't be bashful. Our guest this evening, Jeff Nyquist, and we're sort of talking about the various things that are going on. Now, I know you've been very close to Colonel Stanislaus Lunev, who was a colonel in the Soviet GRU, and I think he's working with Chris Ruddy now, isn't he?
Yes, he's been working for Newsmax. I now have moved over, and I'm working at WorldNet Daily.
Okay.
So, but I talk to Colonel Lunev from time to time, and we exchange notes. He, of course, takes the position that, of course, the Russian General Staff and the GRU believe that war with America is inevitable. And that war, of course, will be a nuclear missile war. This is the standard Russian approach to this question. You know, it's interesting in relation to this. Boris Yeltsin is in Kyrgyzstan, which is one of the Central Asian former republics of the Soviet Union, and he's going to be meeting President Jiang Zemin there on August 25th in Bishkek, and the keynote of the meeting will be the consolidation of their strategic partnership and increased military cooperation and coordination.
Now, I think for our listeners, that, of course, the gentleman that Yeltsin is going to meet is the head of the Chinese Communists.
And
we have to understand that what we're talking about is the consolidation of Russia with its 100 million people or more, and China with its 1.2 billion people, joining together these two great military powers in opposition to the United States in preparation for what many of them believe is the coming war.
Yeah, and of course, August 25th is tomorrow, and that's when the summit will take place. Yeltsin was there today meeting with the leaders of three of the former Soviet Central Asian republics about military cooperation. They have they're going to have Comrade Combat 99 war exercises in which these countries are going to be participating in a kind of air defense shield, an air defense exercise. To see if they can't defend the former Soviet Union from missile and bomber attacks from the West.
And, of course, I think everybody has to understand that every one of the independent Soviet states now is headed by a former communist. And many of us think that they are not former communists. They are still communists.
Yeah.
And that the breakdown of Russia was one of the greatest charades and greatest put-ons of all time. But, of course, the Americans fell for it, as always. Or as Manilovsky had written many, many years ago at the London School of Political Warfare, the West, decadent and stupid, will rejoice when we offer them, a peace. And, of course, when the guard is down, there will be electrifying overtures and unheard of concessions and electrifying overtures. And the West, decadent and stupid, will rejoice. And when their guard is down, we'll crush them with a mailed fist.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny. Yeltsin, of course, was asked some questions by the press when he arrived at Bishkek, this was earlier today. Well, maybe he arrived last night, but anyway, he met with reporters this morning in Bishkek, and they asked him, he'd been having a problem with an inflamed nerve in his back, and they asked him about his health and how he felt, and he said, "I'm feeling fine," and then he added, "I'm ready for combat, especially with Westerners."
Isn't that interesting?
And then
here's the man that, of course, we've continued to fund to give billions and billions and billions of dollars to, and when they recently defaulted on their loans to us, what did we do? Why, we lent them more money, of course. What would you expect that the American banks, which have financed Russia since its inception, would do?
Well, a year ago they defaulted on $40 billion in short-term loans, and, of course, the former Soviet Union and the Russian Federation probably owe in the neighborhood of about $160 to $170 billion. And there's no way they can pay this back. And And the funny thing is I suspect that they have squirreled away a lot of money and that they do have a lot of money, but it's hidden. It's in offshore accounts. They'd like to have us believe that their officials are, that they have corrupt former communist officials that have removed this money. But I think it's being used to modernize the Russian war machine and to suck the most important technology out of the West bit by bit. Almost, you can almost imagine a giant straw from Moscow down into our labs. And, you know, there's even been the claim that the Chinese actually didn't steal the W-88 warhead. The Russians stole it first and gave it to the Chinese. The Russians had already gotten it years before the Chinese got there.
Well, of course, you know, it's sort of like North Korea developing this sophisticated three-stage missile. Does anybody believe that this little decadent, decrepit North Korea that has had some 3 million deaths of its own people, if we're to believe the reports, because it can't even feed them, has the wherewithal to develop nuclear warheads or thermonuclear warheads and three-stage missiles on their own? Of course they're getting them from Russia and China. And anybody who... And the fact that we never suggest that suggests the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. Logic would tell you that North Korea is not in a position to develop these sophisticated warheads or sophisticated missiles. You know, in fact, India and Pakistan, which are fairly advanced countries, have had great difficulty in doing it. They've been able to do it, but you know, there's no way North Korea could do it. It'd be sort of like the Tongo Islands developing something like that, or maybe Venezuela, you know, developing that. There's no way they could do it without outside help. But of course, now we're going to have to give North Korea more money, or they're going to launch a war against us. You know, most absurd thing in the world. And what are we going to do? Why, we're going to give them more money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Western pattern. It's talk, retreat, and pay up. And you know, Colonel Lunev once said to me, this was something he said to me last November. He said, you know what I think is going to happen? He said, I think one day they'll do this nuclear blackmail thing and they'll say, we want more money. And the West will say, sorry, we don't have any more to give. And he said, and that's when they'll make the decision. He says, within 3 months, he said, they'll push the button. But that was, you know, I mean, he was thinking out loud. I wouldn't, you know, it's not a hard and fast prediction, but it's something that passed through his mind. And as a person who was there inside their military establishment, who was trained in their war colleges and in their way of thinking, and many, many times he said to me over and over again about the Russian generals and the Communist Party leaders, these are not human beings, these are crazy persons.
Now, how does he feel about America and our refusal to address the very real threat to our nation?
Well, he once said to me, he looked at me with a kind of pained expression, and he said, why aren't Americans more patriotic? And I said, because they're too busy shopping and having fun.
Well, I think that there's a lot of truth in that.
Yes, I mean, that was the only honest answer I could give, and that's as close to the truth, I mean, in a nutshell. I mean, there's other things going on, too. I mean, I think we have a president in our country who sympathizes with the enemy, who came up through politics sympathizing with the Viet Cong and Ho Chi Minh, and that's why he was an anti-war protester, and that's why he went to the Soviet Union, that's why he organized anti-war protests under the auspices of the World Peace Councils. And there's a group in the United States that took him on, one of the protest groups that took its orders directly from Moscow. And he went to Moscow, he went to Prague, Czechoslovakia. In fact, I'm working on something now. I have a source who was involved with some Czechoslovakians who smuggled tapes that were being moved from Czechoslovakia to Moscow that were allegedly of Bill Clinton's recruitment into the Czech intelligence service when he visited Czechoslovakia in January of 1970. And this man says these men attempted to sell this tape to the White House, sort of as a blackmail thing, you know, sell the originals for a very large sum of money. And he was tapped by them to be the negotiator, and he said he negotiated with Mac McClarty at the time. This was the 1996 elections. They were using the 96 elections as the threat that they would go to the press with the tapes and play them, have a press conference, play them for the press, and he would lose the election, so he had to pay up. Of course, the Czech that had possession of the tapes died. The tapes went missing. Money had gone into his bank account, and then it mysteriously disappeared. It's quite a story.
And, of course, we saw what happened to Ron Brown. We saw what happened to Vince Foster. We saw what happened to Jerry Parks.
Yes.
Do anybody believe for 1 minute that if somebody made an offer like that to Bill Clinton, that they would survive very long? These people must be incredibly naive.
Well,
we're dealing with vicious and people at the highest levels of our government who have no sense of right and wrong.
Yeah, the thing is when you are a high-level corrupt Czech official or former Czech official who wants to make money and get rich, and you're used to outwitting Westerners, these people really didn't think that closely about how powerful this guy was, and they made a big mistake. I think that greed is a very powerful lure for people to do stupid things.
I think that would make a wonderful, wonderful movie. Maybe we could sell the plot to Hollywood. Of course, nobody would ever believe it. But
no, I fear not. And they've got enough to hang Bill Clinton right now for treason by what they got from the Cox Committee, what they know about his past activities and his connections with the shady characters, Russian mafia bosses going in and out of the White House, Chinese spies being brought in and into the Commerce Department like John Wong. We've got Bill Clinton is after power, and you know the rumors circulate around him that he doesn't want to leave office, that he wants to have to break FDR's record, you know, be in office longer than FDR was. That he is willing to allow some kind of national emergency to develop. As a matter of fact, Bill Clinton declared a state of emergency in the United States in 1994.
And I think that's so important for people to understand that he declared a state of emergency for fear of terrorism.
Yes.
Why don't you sort of develop that, and then I'd like you to develop your information on the Chinese smuggling into Mexico, because I think these are important things I'd like our listeners to hear.
Well, there has been a lot of talk in recent years about the threat of biological and chemical and nuclear weapons of mass destruction, particularly these suitcase nuclear bombs. And I talked to Keith Adema this morning, who is a high-level Green Beret, a senior NCO Green Beret, an honorary colonel in the Thai Special Forces, who penetrated Russia, who developed sources and saw that Russia was exporting suitcase nuclear bombs to countries like North Korea and to regimes in the Middle East, rogue states, and that this was done basically intentionally. It was done, the Russian mafias were doing it so that there was plausible deniability on the part of the rulers in the Kremlin, but that it really, the Russian mafia was working for the KGB, and this was intentional, and that it was being done according to a plan. And Adema also, his sources said that the FBI and the CIA were penetrated at very high levels. And when the FBI went to him and said, Mr. Adema, we want your names of your informants in Russia, and he said, I can't give it to you because if I did, they'd be dead the next day because you're penetrated and the people in your office are working for the Russians. And they put him in prison for 4 years. They framed him and put him in prison. They were so irate that he would not give them what they wanted.
Yeah, so that they could kill them. Well, we'll be back in just a moment. We've got about 3 minutes if you'd like to get a cup of coffee or a drink of water or whatever. When we get back, we're going to open up our lines at 464-8295 or at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. So don't even think about changing that dial. We'll be back here again. And remember the numbers to call, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're totally dependent upon you out there in the listening audience who believe in what we're doing to help us to maintain our coverage across America and to expand that coverage. And of course you can help us by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, we'll welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you'll get our 4 Best Tapes of the Month. You'll get our newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us to pay the bills on our stations from sea to shining sea, because it's expensive to do what we do, and many months we're quite usually we go behind, and we believe in what we're doing, and so we continue Radio Liberty, because we think there has to be a voice of sanity out there that's going to bring you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, and help get the message of truth out about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently engaged. And, of course, I know that many of our listeners do support what we do, and I sincerely appreciate their help, and there are others out there that should be joining. Well, they're going to do it next week or next month. And I say, well, now is the time, really, when we need the help. Who knows where we're going to be after the first year? Now, I'm not saying that the world's going to come to an end. I don't know what's going to happen. I know what the occultists say. I know what the people on the radical left say. And they say they're going to be dramatic changes. We know that they want a crisis to use to transform society, to justify collecting of weapons, to justify expanding their control of our lives, and, of course, to pursue their population control agenda program. And what's going to happen? Well, only God knows. But it's going to be a fascinating, fascinating time. But this is the period when we need to get as many people informed as possible, and to get people within the church to understand that this is not a political battle. This is not an ideological battle. This is not a cultural battle. It's a spiritual battle being fought on an ideological and cultural battlefield. And so with your help and God's blessing, hopefully we can continue informing people across America. I did an hour program this morning. I very often do programs on other people's stations. We now are rebroadcasting this evening program on KFER every afternoon from 4 to 6. If you missed part of the program today or tonight, you can hear it again tomorrow afternoon on KFER. And with your help, why we're going to be able to continue expanding our coverage across America. The number to call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Would love to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, during the first half hour, Jeff Nyquist was talking about the relationship between Bill Clinton and the Czechoslovakian communists. We have a book called Clinton Confidential. It's very interesting. This book was written by an author who had written biographies of Cary Grant, John Wayne, Marilyn Monroe. They all sold well, but when he wrote a biography of Bill Clinton and talked about how he went to communist Czechoslovakia and stayed there with the family of the head of the Czechoslovakian Communist Party and talked about his going to Moscow under the auspices, or at least certainly with the help of the KGB. And then, of course, his relationship to the Council on Foreign Relations. Why, you know, that book didn't sell at all. But if you'd like to, it's called Clinton Confidential. We could send you the pages talking about his trip to Czechoslovakia and his involvement with communism or with the communists there. If you want to document this. So what Jeff Nyquist is saying is absolutely right on, and the reason we enjoy having Jeff as our guest is because he is not sensational. He can back up what he says. Jeff, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, fine. We sort of interrupted you. You were beginning to develop the ideas. Well, go ahead. Pick up where we left you off.
Let's see. Where did I leave off?
Well, we were going to talk about two things. One of them was going to be the Chinese communist infiltration of Mexico.
Oh, yes.
The relationship of the Mexican government with the Chinese communists. In fact, the Chinese vessels were met with Mexican warships that were getting them into port so that the Chinese communist drugs could get into our country. You had talked just before we ended about this Green Beret, who was an honorary colonel in the Thai military,
yeah,
who was talking about the Soviet influence and bringing the nuclear-sized suitcase bombs into Thailand and other countries. Where do you want to pick up there?
Well, I should begin by saying that, of course, the North Koreans possessing these weapons is particularly scary, because the North Koreans have a special commando force. They're kind of kamikaze commandos, very well trained, very tough. They can go quite a distance from North Korea on these very fast semi-submarines. These little boats can sneak up at night to any shoreline, and these guys can get ashore carrying, you know, backpack nukes or biological or chemical weapons, and they can enter a country like Japan or Taiwan or Guam or Australia, maybe even the mainland U.S., carrying these weapons. And then they can plant them, and then you have a nuclear explosion. You have a nuclear attack, and they can deploy thousands of these commandos. The Russians have the standard nuclear attack plan for the Russians is to deploy 7,000 to the United States in the days before a nuclear attack.
Now, were these 7,000 Spetsnik troops, or were these 7,000 nuclear bombs?
These are 7,000 Spetsnaz.
All right, fine.
The number of nuclear bombs, suitcase bombs, is unknown. It could be as many as 50 or 100.
Now, right now, I had actually talked to a very highly placed American general who assured me that the suitcase bombs are a reality. They've known about them for a long time,
yeah,
and that probably there are already some already here in the United States.
Asked Colonel Luniv about that. He said it's possible, but that he thought it was unlikely because these things need special maintenance to stay ready to be used. And without having sophisticated equipment nearby, they atrophy. I'm not sure why. It has to do with some of the components. I think there's a gas that's associated with the detonation mechanism.
That's tritium, is that it?
Tritium or something like it.
All right, fine.
I'm not sure. These bombs are very special. They're very different from other kinds because of their size. They are a special technology. They're actually called SADMs, S-A-D-Ms, Strategic Atomic Demolition Munitions or something like that. Small Atomic Demolition Munitions.
Okay.
And so that's actually what they're called. It's not that they're Saddam Hussein, but they're that's just the abbreviation.
Okay, well, anyway, we got Mike back on the line.
Right.
Hi, Mike, did you have a question?
Yeah, just one question. Regarding General Luniv, is it?
Colonel Luniv.
Colonel, okay. Can you explain why it is that you placed your trust in him, that he's not disinforming you in some way? He's a former Soviet.
Well, first of all, what I would tell you is that every time I've talked with him, he's been honest. And he has never given any information that would hurt the United States of America. He has never said anything that would appreciably disinform us. He has not attempted to color the actions of the Russian Federation as if they are benevolent, which is what a false defector would do. He has revealed things to me about his time in China, which suggests that the Chinese have been allied with the Russians for a more considerable period of time than the recent years they have been. He doesn't talk about that much in public because he knows it's not accepted.
Now, what he's saying is that the break between Russia and China was as phony as a $3 bill?
Yeah, well, Luniv, I don't think Colonel Luniv would go that far.
All right.
Because he can only speak about what he's seen.
Right.
And I think he thinks that the Sino-Soviet split was real at one time, but he would admit to you that he doesn't know for sure. He saw things in the 1980s in China that he told me that led him to believe that there was a secret alliance at that time in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And that knocked me over because that's quite different from what his book says. But his book had a ghostwriter, and he had things cut out and things put into the book that, you know, I mean, he has limited options, and English is not his language.
No, I know. I'm very interested to hear you say that, because that's exactly what Gallitzin said, that, you know, he thought that there really never was a split. And, of course, I've read the communist publications going back into the 1960s, even before the split, and I have always felt that this was a phony split.
I think if you look, I mean, there was a point when I was talking to Colonel Luniv, and Chris Ruddy was there with me, and he can testify to this. I brought up this idea of the long-range strategy, and you know, Lunev is a military guy. He's not a KGB guy. And so he's, you know, he's trained as a special forces and as a spy, and he's trained in Oriental languages. Really, English was his third language. And, you know, he'd never read Gallitzin. He'd heard about it, of course, vaguely. And as we had a 3.5-hour discussion, and towards the end of the discussion, he's saying, you know, just thinking out loud, he said, it has to have been a deception. It has to have been a plan if you look at where the Russian Federation has arrived today. And he said that as a person who really, his knowledge is in the military setup. I mean, he's looking at their military moves. I mean, he was going through things in our meeting, for example, saying, what's really odd is that they have the same number of generals in the Russian Federation, the same number of military districts as under the Soviet Union, and the same number of shells for creating divisions. And he pointed out, he said, you know, it takes 2 years to make a division commander. It takes only 8 weeks to make a soldier, a fighting soldier.
So they've kept the structure of their military intact, even though they've cut back on the number of soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. So that, in other words, with a call-up of raw recruits, they could re-flesh out their entire Cold War-era Soviet military in 8 weeks, and we would be hard-pressed to keep up because we haven't kept all the generals and all the higher military officers to reform our divisions in the same short period of time. So what they've done is and he looks at this, and he looks at other things, and he shakes his head because, you know, there's a difference between somebody who looks at something who's been trained, politically trained, as a KGB kind of disinformation officer or counterintelligence officer. He comes from the GRU, and you've got to understand, these organizations produce different kinds of mentalities. There's a soldier mentality in the GRU. There's more of a political mentality in the KGB. And, you know, it's always possible that Lunev is a phony defector. That's always a possibility when you deal with people who are spies. But I have to tell you, I have never detected him in a lie or an attempt to deceive me about these things. I mean, I would disagree with him about certain things because I analyze facts different. But when he talks about something that he knows, that he's seen himself, I trust that what he's saying is true.
I think that's all you can do. I think in this field that you and I are in, we have to develop a sixth sense.
Yeah.
And you have to go by your instincts. And
yeah.
I will tell you, I've met a lot of people that I knew were phonies. Just you know, I met them and they said all the right things, but I knew they were phonies. And I've had the same thoughts that Mike has had about Colonel Lunev, but my gut feeling is that probably he's on the up and up.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, if you get to know him personally or spend some time with him, he is a person who has, and I know this about him, he really loves his wife and his daughter, and he's really retreated into his family. And he is suffering from cancer. And you see this in the man, and, you know, your heart goes out to him, and I think he's very genuinely sickened by politics, by the Cold War, by the whole dirty business. And that's something, yeah, I don't think you can fake.
Okay, fine. Let's get to the subject of what's happening, the relationship between Mexico and the Chinese communists and the drugs.
Right.
And why don't you just develop that idea? Because I think that's so vitally important. Most people do not understand that Mexico had its revolution in the late 1920s and early 1930s, at which time they killed literally thousands of priests, and of course there weren't many ministers there because this was predominantly a Christian country. Mm-hmm. And it was at that time that the socialists took over, and they may not want to refer to themselves as socialists. They've had a one-party authoritarian system ever since the revolution at that time. And the PRI candidate always wins. And if somebody gets in the way, they either buy him off or they kill him. That's the way that Mexico works. And, of course, we have supported this Marxist government since that time. And, of course, when Trotsky escaped from Russia, where did he go? He went to Mexico.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were a socialist country. And people don't understand. This is the way socialism is, a ruling elite and everybody else is enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you pick up why, you know, why, with that as a background, maybe people will be able to understand this very close relationship that exists between the Mexican government and the Chinese communists. Would you like to pick that up?
Yeah, and this I want people to keep in mind what I said about suitcase nuclear bombs and about the possibility, the importance of them being delivered into a country. And we have an open border problem on our southern border with Mexico. And what has been reported, and I have the story right in front of me, it is the August 23, 1999, Insight magazine, an article by Jamie Detmer, boatloads may contain more than immigrants. And in this story, he is talking about small convoys of steamers from China going to Mexico off of Ensenada, unloading people and material. I mean, he speculates that, it's heroin. But it is something considered to be so sensitive that these convoys or these ships are escorted by warships of the Mexican and Chinese navies. Now, can you imagine? That implies state-to-state cooperation. It implies, and also he says that the American intelligence knows that the Mexican mafia, the leading Mexican mafia, which is controlled by Mexico's top narcotics trafficking cartel, which is run by the Arellano Felix brothers in Tijuana, have been linked with the Chinese. They have been doing business with probably with Chinese triad gangsters, who are under control of the Chinese People's Liberation Army and the Chinese Intelligence Service. And so you have this marriage between the communists and organized crime, which is a whole other world of, reality going on. It is the avenue for penetrating things like the corrupt third world governments. And, you know, I think that there is some kind of collaboration, and there have been some terrifying stories coming from south of the border about Chinese military people down there, weapons being stashed, of course, drug trafficking. And it could be that sanctuaries are being set up for the event of a world war, just in case. And we know certainly to the south of Mexico, another Latin American country, Panama, is being heavily penetrated by Chinese. Huge numbers of immigrants. And, in fact, in the recent New American article by Admiral Thomas Moore, the Admiral, former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, has stated in that article that if we continue doing nothing as we are about this Chinese move on the canal, that on January 1st, 2000, Communist China will own the Panama Canal.
And, outright. Of course, we have given it to him by successive administrations, started with Carter, continued with Reagan, it continued with George Bush, and now it continues with Bill Clinton. But it really doesn't matter whether Democrats or Republicans are in control, because both sides were intent upon turning our canal over to the communists. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't make sense unless you look at things from a geopolitical point of view, and then it all makes sense. But with the Chinese in control of the Panama Canal, doesn't that have a tremendous impact on the ability of our Navy to move from one ocean to the other?
Yes, it does. Only aircraft carriers are unable to move through the canal as far as large warships. Most of our surface warships and submarines are smaller and can move through the canal, a lot of them. So it is important for switching that. But the most important thing about the canal, and this was recognized, this has been recognized for decades, is that if a person wants to invade North America, controlling the canal is essential for getting the sea supremacy and for moving the troops to threaten both the Pacific and the Gulf Coast. Because troops moved by sea are far more mobile than troops moving by land. And the mobility of the attacker is what gives the advantage in warfare. The United States coast is too long to defend every inch of beach. We can't do it. And if we allow the Chinese to infest our Western Hemisphere, already the Chinese defense minister has visited Cuba and has talked to Raul Castro, Fidel Castro's brother, who's the defense minister there, about a Chinese military presence in Cuba. So, of course, they need the canal. Cuba, their ally in the Caribbean, they have to be able to reach Cuba. And so the canal is essential for building a Chinese, you know, Caribbean alliance with Mexico and Cuba.
And, of course, what's interesting is the way that they are just progressively surrounding the United States.
Yes. This is what you do before you attack a country. You form alliances, like the Russian-Chinese alliance, which they're trying to get India into.
But don't forget the the Chinese-Mexican alliance.
And the Chinese-Mexican to surround the United States in its own hemisphere, and you try to get advanced bases in the enemy country. You try to forward supply stockpiles of ammunition, and you set yourself up into a position, because all wars are basically won before the fighting begins.
Right.
One side gets itself into a better position than the other.
And, of course, this is what happened during the First World War, when the English actually had their supplies in both Belgium and France, large supplies in preparation for the coming war. They knew the war was coming, and they intended, of course, to defeat Germany in that war.
Yeah.
The Germans didn't intend there was a war. In fact, the King of England had promised German Kaiser that if war came, England would not be involved, but they were simply lying, just as the communists are lying to us today.
Well, the other point to be made about this is that this smuggling route that the Chinese have developed with warship escorts with the Mexicans is very suggestive of the kind of route that you would bring suitcase nuclear bombs into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly would not want, you would want to have absolute control over that route as much as possible, ergo the escorts by warships. Then you would want it along the most porous part of our border, which is our southern border with Mexico. I mean, we just cannot prevent people from crossing.
Well, of course, with NAFTA, there's no way we can check trucks or restrict the truck coming in.
And so
NAFTA has really given the Chinese communists the ability to bring everything they want to into North America.
Yes. After I published my article about this in the WorldNet Daily, I got a number of responses from truckers who drive up and down our nation's highways saying that they see these trucks driven by East Europeans carrying these huge canisters labeled Costco, you know, which is the Chinese overseas shipping company. And Costco has just gotten, for example, the rights for shipping along the Canadian railroad that runs from Vancouver to Chicago, which is the only rail route to Chicago from the Pacific that's controlled by one railroad. So they've entered into an alliance with that company. They have also entered in alliances with other, I think, trucking companies that ship to Chicago from the Mexico area. So they're setting up they're forming corporate links within the United States, transport links, that allow them to ship materials all over the United States through companies that are controlled by the People's Liberation Army. This should never be allowed on American soil. And one of the main features of the Insight magazine article by Jamie Detmer is that Jamie points out here that the Immigration and Naturalization Service and the Customs Service, they're not getting any cooperation on this issue. We're aware that this is a threat of bringing illegal aliens and drugs into the country at the very least. But here the president has declared a state of emergency because we have a concern about weapons of mass destruction being used by terrorists on American soil, and yet we allow this obvious conduit that could be used for this exact same operation, we allow it to exist, and the president does nothing.
It doesn't really make sense, does it? Or maybe it does make sense if you understand the real agenda.
If you understand that Clinton is... What can I say?
Well, let's say that he's a dedicated Marxist. He always has been since he was trained by Professor Quigley at Georgetown University.
Let's say that Mr. Clinton likes the Chinese, the Viet Cong, and Lenin.
But, of course, remember that the most favored nation treaty status has been given to the Chinese communists through successive administrations You know, it didn't start with Bill Clinton. It started with Richard Nixon, and then with Gerald Ford, and then with Jimmy Carter, and then with Ronald Reagan, and then with George Bush. So we can't put it all on Bill Clinton. And I'm not defending Bill Clinton. I'm saying that I believe it's a bipartisan treason. And, of course, who has built up the military of communist China? And it didn't start with Bill Clinton. It's been going on for many years. Who has been funding communist China? Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, the International Monetary Fund, which we control, the World Bank, which we control, General Motors, General Electric, all of our major corporations, the same corporations which two generations ago built up Adolf Hitler, are now building up what's going on in communist China.
I have in front of me, I have the Cox report, which is the unanimous and bipartisan report of the House Select Committee on U.S. National Security and Military Commercial Concerns with the People's Republic of China. And I think perhaps the most important paragraph in the whole book, on the bottom of page 62, reads, "The People's Republic of China's massive potential consumer market is the key factor behind the willingness of some U.S. businesses to risk and tolerate technology transfers."
And but where are the Chinese companies going to get their money to buy our products? I mean, that was the same line they told us about Mexico. Look at that great, great market down there. Where are the Mexican peasants going to get the money to buy our products? Why, they don't have any money to buy our products.
Well, what's interesting is still, even no matter how poor they are, if you can sell a three-penny candy to 1.25 billion people, it's still a lot of money.
It may be a lot of money, but we sold an awful lot of scrap metal to Japan before the Second World War, and we got it back in the bodies of our boys.
Yeah, this business of putting, that Americans have, of valuing the economy, of valuing money. Yes, we need a good economy. You need to make money, but not at the expense of our sovereignty, not at the expense of our national security. We have to draw the line. We are not a company. We are a country. We are American.
Amen to that. Jeff, and it's been a fascinating time. I always enjoy having you with us, and God bless you for everything you're doing. I hope we can call on you from time to time to keep our listeners across America advised as to what's really going on.
Yes, Stan, thanks for having me on. Is there time to give the 800 number?
Please,
my
please
book?
Go ahead.
Yeah, my book, you can get my book, Origins of the Fourth World War, by calling 1-800-952-5595.
That's 952-9955?
No, it's 5595.
559. Give it once more.
Yeah, it's 1-800-952-5595. And if you're in the L.A. area, ask them about the program where Larry Clement, Bill Gertz, and myself are going to speak in L.A. next September 17th through 19th.
Okay, thanks so much, Jeff. God bless you. Good night.
Thanks.